Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, it is Sunday night, and that's a major slap of the bass. It means it's time for the weekend wrap. Got to make a few little modifications this afternoon. Mr. Scully will not be here. His father is ill, so he's at the hospital with his father. Our prayers go out with Mr. Scully, and we hope for his father to have a speedy recovery. And we look forward to having Mr. Scully back on as soon as possible. But right now we're joined by my colleague and fellow veteran, Mr. Kalani Lua. Kalani, how we doing tonight, my man?
Hey, James, what's going on, man? It's been an eventful weekend. My Raiders got the W, so I'm just full of life and joy right now.
I know that's right, my man. I know that's right. My Steelers showed out, so... Hey, nothing but smiles, big smiles and happiness today. So, hey, let's get the show on the line. Let's talk a little bit about your favorite subject, though. We're going to cover a little MMA. And I also heard that there was a big contest this week in town. The Mr. Olympia contest, I believe, was in town. Am I correct?
Yes, it was. It was the 51st Mr. Olympia bodybuilding competition this weekend out here in Vegas. And it was quite an event there.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the event? And, you know, I mean, hey, Vegas bodybuilders, you know, showgirls, boxing, entertainment. I mean, hey, what bigger forum could you use to put on an event like this?
I mean, really, James, you know, you get a big event like that. Vegas is one of the best places to have it at. And this weekend, it was full of great storylines. That, you know, for those who are interested in the world of fitness, not just particularly bodybuilding yourself, trying to be big and massive, but just overall fitness and health and working out and going to the gym, it's a great place to go. They have an expo there where you can go in for 2 days, and you can literally go to almost any supplement brand that you can think of that's out there in the world is there at the event. They're giving out samples of the product. They have, obviously, their product there for sale, clothing line, supplements as far as protein, pre- and post-workout, creatine. And then you get to meet a lot of these fitness people that you see, whether it be you're a fan of strongman competitors, you get to meet a lot of them, both male and female. If you're a fan of the CrossFit community, they have CrossFit celebrities there as well as far as some of their major athletes who have grown. And then the bodybuilders themselves. A lot of people may look at bodybuilding with a sore eye, but also remember, you know, the famous Arnold Schwarzenegger came from the world of bodybuilding as well. And this year, the reigning and defending champ, Phil Heath, he's won it 4 times in the past. He was defending his title, looking for his 5th one in a row. And if he was successful, he would have become the first guy since Ronnie Coleman in the early 2000s to win 5 in a row. But the major storyline for this weekend was Phil Heath's biggest rivalry for the last 5 years, Kai the Predator Green, who for the last 4 years, all 4 years of Kai, that Phil Heath has won Mr. Olympia, Kai Green has been his runner-up. They've been battling each other with their physiques, trying to outdo each other. There's some heated rivalry between the two. Kai Green ultimately was not competing this weekend, now due to an injury or an illness, but due to mysterious reasons. It was known as far as Tuesday afternoon that Kai Green posted that he wasn't going to be competing this year at the Olympia. There's a lot of speculation about what was going on. It was reported that there was a dispute between him and the Olympia Commission, the IFBB, as far as booth tolls and fees. If you have a supplement brand, you want to get a booth at the expo to put your product out there on the floor, you pay a fee. Then there was a story out that, you know, maybe Kai Green just wasn't fully prepared. Maybe he had some problems with his midsection and his gut, and he wasn't going to be able to compete. So that was a big headline. But be that as it may, he wasn't competing, and still he's become your five-time Mr. Olympia champion. But that's not because Kyle wasn't there. Still, he brought an incredible package from head to toe. He was ripped. He was shredded. His conditioning was on point. His muscle bellies were full, right, hard, solid. It was a tremendous looking figure. I'm going to be posting a story about it on my sports page, All Things Sports on Facebook later on. So he was there, and then the runner-up, since Kyle wasn't there, was former Olympia champion, Mr. 2008, Dexter Jackson. At 46 years old, he was the oldest competitor in the competition, but he looked like he was 26 years old. I mean, this guy, every year is consistent, and he just came up a little bit short, but he surprised a lot of people at his age to be able to get second place there. So that was fun and eventful, excuse me, and going on for the weekend. Like I said, every year, This event happens in Vegas. This is my second time attending, and I got to say, for someone who may not physically look like in shape, just to be there around that atmosphere of good people who enjoy the fitness community and healthy way of living, it's a great event, a lot of fun. I highly recommend it, people. If you get a chance, check out a Miss Olympia event sometime in your life. It's definitely worth it.
Now, how did you get started off in the fitness world yourself, Kalani?
Well, you know, James, being a veteran myself, when I was in the service, obviously we got to stay physically fit. We got to keep our bodies up to high fitness levels so that we could go ahead and carry out our different missions with our jobs. While I was deployed my second time in Iraq, one of my NCOs, a sergeant, actually introduced me. He said, hey, if you want to work out, you can go to the gym, do these exercises, but if you want to learn more, get a muscle magazine. So he took me. I got a Flex magazine. It had Ben White on the cover, who at that time was a newly found bodybuilder, and I just fell for it. You know, like I say, everyone thinks bodybuilding is just all about how big you can get, how much muscle and mass can you put on your body. But there's a whole lot to it. I mean, I was taking it, and I was literally 180 pounds, but I was breathing because I could take their exercises, alternate to my standards, what I can do, and for the body that I want. So from there, just carrying over from the job of having to be fit in the Army to just everyday life of just wanting to eat right, live long, and just have a better overall healthy body and feel better about myself as far as health-wise. So I just got into it from there, and then, you know, the curiosity and the interest just grew from there, and now here I am going to my second Mr. Olympia competition, and I plan on attending quite a few more in the years to come.
Now, as you know, somebody just beginning, or you know, someone that's curious, you know, as you were when you first started out, can you kind of, you know, point them in the right direction? Tell them maybe, you know, some of the things that they should be reading, possibly, you know, and maybe some of some of the other misconceptions that we may have, you know, of the sport and the industry in general.
Well, James, I would say that if you're unfamiliar with the sport of bodybuilding or just overall fitness and health, and you kind of want to learn more about it, whether it's to lose weight, to get better abs, or whatever your reason it may be, I would highly suggest that if you want to start by reading material, you can get the Flex magazine. That has been around for over 30 years, and it is the leading muscle magazine out there. It gives great articles, not just on bodybuilding, but women's physique, women's figure, men's physique. You know, it goes from if you're the 130-pound female who likes to wear a bikini to if you're a 280-pound male who wants to get small. It has a lot of great articles and advice and workout tips in there for you. Muscle Development is another very good and highly respected magazine. And also, if you go on to bodybuilding.com, that is the number one website, not only to buy supplements, but they have many articles on there for really anything that involves fitness. Me, myself, I enjoy cheeseburgers a little bit more than I should. If I want to shed 10 to 15 pounds for the holidays coming up so I could pig out for Thanksgiving, they have articles on there where I could read saying, hey, what are some exercises I could do to help lose weight? What are some things I could do instead of me just saying, oh, well, let me just go run? No, there's other things that you can do in the gym as well that can help you sweat and burn the calories. And, you know, in today's day and age with so much fast food and so much stuff being put into the foods, our bodies are a lot bigger. You know, America is the number one obese country in the world right now. So if you want to be healthier, Look, you don't have to be able to step on stage and look like Arnold Schwarzenegger or Ronnie Coleman or Phil Heath, but if you just want to feel better and live healthier, working out and eating right definitely is the essentials of that. And I got to say, James, one of the biggest conceptions that I used to have about fitness and bodybuilding that I really have felt is a complete misunderstanding is a lot of people say, oh, they're nothing more than a bunch of dumb muscle heads. They're nothing more than a couple of jocks who just lift weights. They're stupid. They're roided up. And they don't know no better. Just a bunch of big goons in the gym throwing weights around. Realistically, though, these are some of the smartest men and women in the world. As I said, America is the number one obese country in the world. And this is part of that. These people who are in this world are part of that 1% that actually is healthy. Now, I understand people will say bodybuilding automatically goes to steroids. Now, I understand that's out there, but at the same time, you also have to understand there's a lot more to it than just putting some steroids into your body and, bam, I get big. That's not the case right here. These guys really constrict a very strict diet and workout routine. They put a lot of supplements into the body, and not always is this illegal, and I don't want to get into that aspect of it because that's just one of the things I really felt was really good is, James, you know, I'm living here in Las Vegas. I had my good friend from Virginia come down. We literally could meet anybody there, and we could talk to them as if we've known them already. I met a guy from Maryland, another one from Arizona, another guy from Washington, and while we're waiting in line to get a supplement or to meet a bodybuilder, in the world of fitness, it is transversal in every language, every age group. You see guys who are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s there, and people young as 18 and 19 there, and all of them look to have the same conversation and be able to communicate with each other because realistically, the fitness community is really about uplifting each other and supporting each other to be better. And that's something that I really did not think was true. I used to just think, oh, these guys, you know, they're a bunch of jerks, they're a bunch of meatheads, but no, they're some of the nicest, calmest people I've ever met. A lot of good characters there. And even if you're not on their level, you don't need to be. They look at it and say, hey, man, as long as you are trying and you try to do what makes you feel better, all the power to you. So that was one of the biggest misconceptions I had. And I got to say, it's been real inspiring and motivating for me to turn myself around, not necessarily to get big and be on stage, but just to have a healthier way of living and eating so that my body can feel better and also look better.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the fascination. I mean, you know, quite naturally being out here in California, you know, you see most people are acquainted at least with the name Venice Beach, and there's a certain mystique that goes with it, you know, the bodybuilders, the big guys out on the sand and whatnot. You know, and then you have, you know, of course, the big contest, you know, you mentioned the Arnold Schwarzenegger, you see the big boys, I mean, you know, and it all looks good, but hey, you know, a lot of people don't know how much dedication and hard work that takes to get and keep yourself at that high level. There's another subject that's very close to you that I'd like to talk a little bit about. We've seen Bellator this week was on Spike TV, and I believe there was an almost historic moment. Tito Ortiz tapped out.
Yes, it was a historic, yet if you're a fan of the Huntington Beach Bad Boy, a painful moment that happened. Tito Ortiz, who's a mixed martial arts legend, he was, before John Jones came, he was the longest-reigning UFC light heavyweight champion. The man literally throughout his career has taken on the who's who of every generation. In fact, if you go back, he's probably taken on the best fighters at his division for almost two full decades. You know, started in the late 90s, carried into the 2000s, and still going today. Tito Ortiz, at 40 years old, had a chance to capture the Bellator Light Heavyweight Championship from its current champ, Liam McGarry, who's from Great Britain. And Ortiz, you know, even though he was 40, he physically still looks good. He was aggressive and, for the most part, controlled a good portion of the match. He was able to get McGarry to the ground, and Ortiz, being a wrestler, that's where he wants to keep guys. He wants to get them for ground and pound, elbows, and pounding guys away. But McGarry, being 6'6" and being a tremendously good Brazilian jiu-jitsu grappler on the ground, he's very tricky with his submissions, how he likes to set them up. And with his long legs, he can really slapped on triangle chokes from different angles that a lot of guys who aren't as tall as him have trouble doing. And when Ortiz had him against the fence, McGarry slapped on the inverted triangle, which basically, instead of the head being 12-6, Tito's head was actually 3-9 facing him. But McGarry, with those long legs, was able to strap it on, and Tito had to choke out. He was either going to tap out, or he was going to be choked out and put to sleep. Tito tapped out, and it was the first round. And for the most part, you know, Tito, who's had a great career, you would think a man has been in over 30 MMA fights and fighting for close to 18 years, he would have had some submissions throughout his career. He's rarely had any. In fact, I think he's only had two or three submissions throughout his whole career. So it was a bit of a historic night in that sense. And plus the fact, like I said, Tito is such a big name in the community of mixed martial arts. To get a victory over him, even at 40 years old, still speaks very high to Leon McGarry's overall skill set.
Yeah, I remember very much the Huntington Beach bad boy, you know, and we all know about, you know, his troubles in and out of the ring, his famous wife and whatnot. But there was also another former UFC guy on this fight, Mr. Phil Davis. How did Phil look, and talk a little bit about his fight?
Yeah, you know, the one thing about Bellator, James, is that even though they are the second promotion under the UFC, UFC's been around much longer, obviously, Bellator is really starting to make a name for itself, not only with the type of fight that it puts on, but the fighters it's bringing over. Phil Davis, who was a longtime UFC competitor, was pretty good for the most part. He got some pretty good wins in his career there, just couldn't be consistent in the last couple of years with splitting wins and losses. He becomes a free agent, goes to Bellator, and he's a former Division I All-American wrestler and national champion, and now he goes into Bellator. He was in the first ever Bellator four-man light heavyweight tournament to determine the number one contender for the title between McGarry and Ortiz, and Davis looked phenomenal. You know, he kind of has a bit of a reputation for being a slow starter, that a casual fan would say a boring fighter, because he utilizes his wrestling skills a lot to take guys down and gain position on him. But he was having none of that last night. He got a first submission in his first match, and then in the second one, he had a late replacement for his finals opponent because of an injury that took place earlier. He took on Francis Carmuth, and Phil Davis, in spectacular fashion, got a left hook KO in the first round on him. Sure, it took a couple minutes, and the fans weren't really starting to get a little unrattled there. But Phil Davis, with a first-round submission and a first-round knockout in his Bellator debut, he's now the number one contender for Leon McGarry's light heavyweight championship. And Phil Davis, physically, he looks the part. Now, if he puts it together in the cage to where he's more aggressive, looking for more submissions, and he's adding striking power to his overall stand-up game, Phil Davis might be the guy who could dethrone Leon McGarry, even though he's been a short-term champion. This is going to be an interesting matchup between the two guys going forward. McGarry, 6'6", good striker, good grappler. Davis, 6'2", 6'3", very good grappler, and now he's adding striking power. Who's going to win between these two? I don't know, but I'm certainly looking forward to it when it does happen.
Now, you know, in boxing, we always see it happen. I mean, you know, we now, you know, we've just seen Shane Mosley get back in the ring a couple weeks ago. Roy Davis has been fighting at the cruiserweight, I believe. And we've also had Antonio Tarver come back in the ring fighting his heavyweight. Now we see, you know, a guy that hasn't been back in, that hasn't been inside the octagon since 2012, and I'm talking about Fedor, excuse me if I butcher up this name now, Emelianenko. He's supposed to come back and fight December 13th. And as I said, now he's been out of the game for almost 3 years now. Kalani, is it more dangerous for fighters to come back at an advanced age inside the octagon? I mean, is this much more dangerous, I guess, is the word that I want to use, than getting back inside the squared circle?
You know what, Dave? That remains to be seen. The only reason I say that is because there was a time in the early and mid-2000s where the older fighters in UFC from the 90s tried to make a comeback, and they were matched up against younger fighters who were a little bit more well-rounded in their skill set, and it didn't really go well for these guys in the cage. What we've seen now in the UFC's heavyweight division the last couple of years, there's been quite a bit of a resurgence between the older fighters. Guys are allowing their bodies to heal up. Now with the advancement of modern technology and science and training, guys are training a bit different. They're not going in there punishing their bodies throughout training camp. Camp the entire time. They're, you know, with the experience of fighting for so long, they kind of know how to manipulate the training camp system so that they know when to push themselves really hard and when to kind of back it off. We've seen a 36-year-old Andrei Arlovski. He's gotten three straight wins down by finishes. His last one was a decision. Frank Mir, at 38 years old, he's had a couple of knockouts in the past 2 years, even though he just lost to Andrei Arlovski in the decision. But those two guys are up there in age, and they're starting to make a comeback. So with the MMA legend like Fedor, and you did get his last name by Emelianenko, you know, the last emperor who built a reputation in the 2000s over in Pride in Japan, he went 10 straight years undefeated. Now, granted, that may not have always been against the best competition in the world, but he certainly dominated anyone that they put in front of him, from the top guys to maybe guys who maybe were a bit overwhelmed. But he's coming back. There is a notification that before, in 2012, he had some injuries that he just couldn't get over, but now 3 years away removed, his body is healed. He's turned around his he's altered his training regimen now to where physically he looks very impressive. There was before where he had a bit of a bulge in his gut, a little gutty. Now he looks more muscular, looks more well-defined and better conditioned. I got to say, for Fedor to come back at this time, you know, last night when I asked him why, he said he's a fighter. If he's been training hard and he's been changing how he does things, I say, hey, why not come back? The Bellator heavyweight division, it's pretty good, but it's not stacked up. And it still remains to be seen who his opponent is going to be. But Fedor is still relatively young as far as competition terms. He's only 38 years old. He has been away for 3 years. So will the rust catch up to him? Or will the last emperor be able to find the fountain of youth and be able to recapture some of his previous glory from the past? That remains to be seen. But he's such a big name, James. Honestly, fans are going to lurk to it just because it is Fedor and it is one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I have to agree with everything that you said, you know. I'm always a little leery because, as you know, I mean, you know, you're nowhere near my age, but, you know, as you get older, you know, the body does take a little bit longer to heal, you know, and you might still think that you're throwing that jab out there as quick as you did years ago, but, you know, believe me, you know, we all tend to try to, you know, hold on to the glory and whatnot. And I'm just a little leery, like I said, you know, with some of these older gentlemen coming back into the ring, as you mentioned, you know, against younger guys, you know, more improved techniques. Not only that, you know, different training techniques, more strength. So all this does remain to be seen, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing them back in the ring, the names that I'm familiar with, but, you know, sometimes I think it's time to pass on the torch. Claudia, another thing that I want to kind of get into you about this. Now, Mr. Nick Diaz has been suspended 5 years. 5 years for the use of marijuana. Now, you know, I understand, you know, that you know, hey, all of these different sports, NFL, NBA, they all set up the program. You know in advance, you know, that, you know, you aren't allowed to use this drug, that drug, whatever. And I understand that he does have a previous record. But, Kalani, 5 years, don't you think that's a bit excessive considering the political climate of today's, of the use of marijuana, you know, in today? I mean, you know, hey, Oregon, recreational use. Washington, recreational use. Colorado, recreational use. Here in California, medical use. You know, we have about 30 states now. Isn't this a bit excessive?
when you speak of excessive, James, the 5-year ban does seem excessive, but let me also clarify this. The Nevada State Athletic Commission, one of its board members, she recommended a lifetime ban. Now, 5 years seem excessive, but she recommended a lifetime ban for Nick Diaz. Obviously, it didn't get any votes for that, so they reduced it. They came up with 5 years, and yet it's extremely excessive, an abuse of power. Although this is his third offense in the state of Nevada with marijuana, he had a case back in 2012 and again in 2009, I believe, where he failed for marijuana tests as well. Now, one of the things that's very tricky about all this, and it's also a bit frustrating, is the fact that, as you said, in the state of California, it is, you can get medical marijuana, and Nick Diaz does have a California medical card for his prescription. And the test that he failed, I'm sorry that I cannot pronounce the name, but I did not go to school long enough to know how to pronounce these big words, names that they use. But the test that they used to test him doesn't tell you when it was in his system. So he could have smoked a joint the same day of the test or a month before the test, and it wouldn't matter. It would just still show up in his system. So when the test was orchestrated, Nick Diaz's lawyer pointed out a handful of flaws in the testing system in the way that the Nevada State Athletic Commission was going about this. Now, a lot of people who were covering it, I was following it very closely, felt that the Nevada State Athletic Commission really acted this harshly because of what Nick Diaz's attorney was able to point out in their flawed system. Basically, he was saying, you guys are abusing your power. You're not doing this the correct way. You're doing it actually completely wrong and ass backwards. Yeah, you want to sit here and play judge, jury, and executioner. And for that, everyone knows, hey, when you get caught on stuff, especially when you're a person in the position of power, you don't like to be embarrassed, and sometimes you act out in an irrational way. This certainly was it. There's been a huge uproar, not only from fans, but also from MMA fighters across the globe, whether they use marijuana or not, they're in support of Nick Diaz. This is excessive. When you have someone like an Anderson Silva, who was Nick Diaz's last opponent in January, Anderson Silva tested positive for PEDs on 3 different occasions for that fight, for 3 separate PEDs in his system. Now, he had a hearing, came up with these excuses on why they were in his system, but he only got a year banned with time already served. His hearing was in July, so that means from January to July, that time was already served. And as of right now, Anderson Silva should be back sometime either early or mid-next year to fight in the cage again. John Jones, he popped hot for cocaine use in January. He just had a hit and run, and now he's only been suspended. He hasn't even been suspended yet by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Nick Diaz, over marijuana for the third time, is being suspended for 5 years. And at 32 years old, which is Nick Diaz, they're basically killing his whole career because he'll be 37 by the time he comes back. They're basically shutting out his whole career. I really do hope Nick Diaz takes this to court, and which he is planning to, from what I hear. He's planning to take this to court and sue the Nevada State Athletic Commission. I hope he wins, gets this overturned, and he's able to come back and fight because he is one of the most entertaining fighters out there with a big population. And this really is a bit excessive. And like you said, James, they really kind of need to alter. You know, I understand you don't have drugs in your system, but marijuana isn't even a performance enhancer. It would be nice if they altered their standards for marijuana, not for any other drugs, but for marijuana in the system of fighters going forward. We'll see how that is across the board for all sports as time goes on and it becomes more and more of a recreational use in more states.
Yeah, Ronda Rousey came out with a statement. Stephen A. had some problems with it. But her statement was, I'm against even testing for weed at all. It's not a performance-enhancing drug. It's only tested for political reasons. Do you agree with that, Kalani?
You know, in a way, I do, James. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not one that could give you all these statistical breakdown of what marijuana does to your system. All I know is that when I turn on the news at any time, I don't hear about nobody dying in a car accident from being high on marijuana. I don't hear about nobody going crazy and shooting up a mall or a school being high on marijuana. I don't hear about nobody getting diseases, having liver or kidney problems from marijuana. In fact, I hear more so that if you are sick with cancer or an ailment that's causing you a lot of pain, they medically prescribe you marijuana so that you can feel better. I certainly don't feel that it's a performance enhancer. It doesn't make you stronger. It doesn't make you faster. It doesn't make your reflexes any better. It doesn't do anything to the body besides more so calm you down and relax you. And like I've said before in other conversations, how is it that you can justify putting one brand of supplements into your system, but you can't put other supplements into your system? Where do you dictate? Where do you draw the line at? You know, cigarettes and alcohol is perfectly legal here, and that stuff kills millions of people every year. But marijuana, which doesn't, is not. I really don't understand it. What's the difference between me having a bong to smoke on the night before the fight or me grabbing a 40-ounce from the liquor store the night before the fight and I get a little tipsy and drunk? I don't understand the difference there. But it, like I said, James, it would be nice if they altered their restrictions or rules on it. But until that happens, fighters are just going to have to continue to fight this process or lay off the weed, in the words of Stephen A.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I mean, there's always been a lot of controversy around the weed, you know, so, you know, you think, you know, in today's relaxed atmosphere, I'll put it like that, you know, that this wouldn't be something that we're still talking about. But, hey, you know, hopefully the different sports will get together and decide exactly what they're going to do. To me, you know, I mean, what do? You reside in the state, you reside by that state, you know, you live by that state's laws, but yet that's in conflict with your job. I mean, you know, or like you say, you know, you just lay off the weed. But, you know, everybody makes their own personal choice. But, Kalani, thank you so much, man, for coming on another Sunday night, expressing, you know, the different aspects of MMA and explaining also the fitness industry to us. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on the social media, my man, and anything that you may have coming up or any articles that you might be putting up on the web.
As always, James, I thank you and appreciate you for allowing me to come on here and talk sports with you. It's always a great thrill, always a pleasure of mine to be on here. You guys can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at KLua11, that's KLUA11. You can follow my sports page on Facebook, All Things Sports. As I said earlier, I'll be putting out an article covering the Mr. Olympia weekend that just happened. And then also, you know, with the games that are going on, I'll be covering that. Today we have 5 former Heisman Trophy winners starting in NFL games. They went 4-1. The one loss came because 2 Heisman Trophy winners were facing each other. So that's pretty unique. And, you know, you guys can just follow me on social media. I'm just covering the world of sports as it comes from a different angle. And you guys can catch up here Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. James, as always, my man, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your evening and look forward to talking to you throughout the week.
All right, my man. And don't forget, this Thursday, we're going to be talking a lot about those high school kids down in San Antonio, Texas. As you know, Mr. Don Hayes is from San Antonio. He's kind of familiar not only with some of the teachers, but also with some of the sports commissioners and referees and things that are involved here. So I intend to have a great conversation about that Thursday, and we'll see you then, my man. You have a great night.
Okay, James, you too. Thanks.
All right. All right, that was Kalani Lua. We're talking a little bit of MMA and Mr. Olympia. But right now, it's time for a little straight talk with Mr. Ronnie Shields. Hey there, Ronnie. What's going on, my man?
Hey, how are you?
Oh, doing great, man. Been a couple of weeks since we had you on. A lot of things happened since then. But before we get started, the first thing I want to do is congratulate you on your brand new champion, Mr. Jamal Charlo.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. It's a great win. He really did everything we asked him to do, and you know, now he's champion of the world. Couldn't be happier.
Yeah, 7-year journey. We've been with you step by step through most of the way. it was a great performance by Jamal. Ronnie, you just, you know, I mean, how fulfilling is it, you know, the 7 years, my man? I mean, you know, that's blood, sweat, and tears, you know, I mean, you know, not just for the young man, but also for you.
Well, you know, actually, yeah, I mean, absolutely, you know, it you know, I just let you know, it takes time to get to a certain point in your career, and it was 7 years since the day that he turned professional, so winning a world title on that day was, you know, that was extra special, but, you know, but it just, you know, it takes a lot of maneuvering, the right fights to get you in that position, and, you know, and I tell you, man, thanks to Al Heyman, it was, you know, he put him in the right position at the right time, and now he's champion of the world. So he's very happy about that. We're very happy. And now, you know, we just got to continue the hard work, and now, you know, the hard part is defending it.
Oh, yeah. Well, like they said, I mean, you know, the journey to get to the top is long, but staying there is even harder. Ronnie, you've had both twins there with you all this time, but can you kind of talk about the journey, you know, with both gentlemen, and, you know, how you, I mean, because we actually have watched you this time, and you're more somewhat of a father figure more than an authority figure, I would say. Has the relationship between you and the twins kind of made this an even more fulfilling journey?
Well, you know, it's always fulfilling when, you know, you start kids off in the very beginning, you know, and then to take one of them to the top, to world championship. You know, that's almost unheard of in today's, you know, in the way today the boxing is structured, with so many fighters out there, and sometimes you have so many changes, you know, they go from this trainer to that trainer to that trainer, you know, but to start a guy off from the very beginning as a professional, and to see him win a world championship, you know, you just can't. That's hard to measure, you know. That just let you know that you did something right, and that the kid did something right also. So, you know, we worked hard, and, you know, but you know, sad to say right now, though, that I no longer train Jamil Charlo. I split with Jamil a couple months ago, but you know, it is what it is, and I, you know, very happy with the things that we're doing with Jamal, and that's the focus. And then the focus is everybody else that we have in the stable, and we are really just going to continue to do what we've always done, and that's train hard and, you know, fight the best guys that's out there.
Ronnie, one of the differences, and you kind of touched on it a little bit in your last remarks there, but one of the things that I think kind of separates you from a lot of the other trainers is you take a young kid and bring him along step by step by step. We see a lot of trainers, a lot of the so-called famous trainers, you know, that get fighters after they've already reached a certain level, or they don't want to, you know, maybe I don't want to say they don't want to take the time to teach, but it seems like, you know, they want to take a polished product and add to it, whereas you build from the foundation up, right? Tell us what made you decide to take that approach instead of picking up guys that were already so-called contenders?
Well, you know, the thing about it is I've been very fortunate, you know, in my career, that a lot of the young fighters, they've seen what I've done in the past, and I've always had guys to contact me, and, you know, and want to have me to train them, And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, I'm very selective on the guys that I do take. I mean, you know, a lot of the seasoned guys call me too. You know, some I take, some I don't take. You know, it just depends on the personality of the guy. You know, if I know anything about him, if it's not good, then I won't accept him, you know. And I guess the thing about it also is that, you know, I want to be around good guys. I don't want to be around, you know, I don't care how much money a guy makes, you know, if he doesn't have the character to, you know, to be a good guy in this sport, then I certainly don't want to be involved with that. You know, they can keep their money, they can do whatever they want to do, you know. And, you know, I've seen it all the time where some of these guys take on these seasoned pros and the guys want to, you know, they tell them what to do, what they want to do, how they want to do it, you know. And you know, I don't work that way. You know, if you hire me to do a job, then my job is to, you know, pick good opponents for you, to put a game plan out that I feel is going to work for you. And, you know, if you can't work with that, then you can't work with me. So, you know, and that's the reason, you know, I'm very selective.
Yes, well, not just selective, but it also makes you successful. It builds your reputation. And, I mean, within the industry, Ronnie, I mean, you have one of the most flawless reputations that there is. That, you know, I mean, everybody considers, you know, your opinion. We love talking to you. You give us, you know, as we say, straight talk. So when you first get a young man, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, some of you, the young men you have, like Mr. Pee Wee Cruz, Cowboy Carl, and the young men like that. I mean, you know, you, some of these men come halfway around the world to train with you, Ronnie. How fulfilling is that, you know, watching these young men, you know, just week by week and month by month, watching, you know, them grow?
Well, actually, I mean, you know, it is. It's, you know, that's one of the satisfying parts about being a trainer, is you do see a guy grow. You see him change throughout different fights. And, you know, and that's the satisfying part about it, is that when you see that change and then you know that, you know, you've been a part of something like that, you know, it only, you know, makes you want to keep on doing it and do more. You know, because, you know, obviously, you know, a guy, no matter who it is, have to have some kind of talent. But you, as a trainer, have to bring that talent out of them. And then they put all their trust in you to do that. And when you see it and it happens, man, it's the most satisfying thing, you know, that you can have.
Yeah, and I mean, we can see it. And here, you know, from all your young fighters that we interview and, you know, we see their different performances in the ring. But Ryan, talk to us about another young gentleman that was on that same program, and he seems to be coming along pretty well. The young Mr. Brian Pee Wee Cruz, how's he doing, and what did you think of his performance that particular night?
I tell you what, man, I was really proud of Pee Wee. He had a really tough fight. You know, the thing about it is, you know, I hate last minute opponents. I really truly do hate it, because you just never know what you're gonna get. And this is why I continue to stress to my guys, you have to train hard, because you just don't know, you know, who you're gonna face sometimes. And you know, and this kid took the fight on a week's notice, but he was already training for another fight. We find out later on he was training to fight this kid, Mario Barrios. But somebody told him, don't fight, you know, Barrios, not to take that fight, because the kid was too good, you know. So, you know, I mean, unbeknownst to us, though, this kid had been training and, you know, was already scheduled to have some fights. And, you know, so But we took the fight, and, man, I tell you, this kid was so good. He was a lot better than, you know, people was telling us from the very beginning. But this is why you have to be in shape, and you have to, you know, have to be ready for anything and all things in the sport. And I tell you, you know, it worked out perfectly because PB went a hard 8 rounds, and, you know, he came up victorious. And that's what you want to see a young fighter do, you know. And, you know, the guy was in his chest the whole night long, and PB boxed when he had to box. And at some point, I made PB just stop and, you know, trade punches with him. And he did everything I asked him to do, and, you know, he won the unanimous decision, but it was a hard-fought unanimous decision, and it can't do anything but help him in his career to be a better fighter. So I was glad of that, and I was proud of him, and, you know, and I told him, you know, I called him up the other day, and I told him what a great fight he fought, and, you know, that's the way he got to continue to train hard, and now he understands, you know, what it takes to be a champion.
Most definitely. And then to watch the performance that Jamal put in against K-9, Ronnie, kind of take us through that fight, man. I mean, what an exciting fight. We've been waiting for a long time for that fight. But, Ronnie, Jamal actually made it look kind of easy.
Well, I tell you, my man, all of the hard work that Jamal put in, you know, because the fight was supposed to be scheduled in July, and then it got put back because K-9 got cut in sparring. So we had to, you know, that just added to, for us, more training, actually. And that's what it came down to, more training. But it just gave us more time. And, you know, and the good thing about it is he wasn't disappointed. He wasn't disappointed. In the fact, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hello? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yes.
He wasn't disappointed. Okay. He wasn't disappointed when the fight got put back. You know, and that was a good thing. You know, it's, you know, and I told him, I said, look, you know, all we got to do is just continue to train and to just focus. That's all it is, you know what I mean? You know, anything that's worth waiting for is worth having. So I said, you're going to win this fight, and just don't worry about it. You know, we just got to work hard. So he said, okay, no problem. And we did. You know, we backed him off a little bit. But then when the fight got a date, you know, when we finally got a set date of September 12th, to say, boom, that's it. Okay, now we got something to look forward to. And, you know, we trained hard. We did so many different things. And, I mean, he enjoyed everything. And, you know, it was perfect. And then come fight night, you know, the best part about it was, in the dressing room when we were doing hand pads in the dressing room, and then they called us, all right, told us if I was time to walk. The first thing he told me before we walked out was, he said, I'm going to do everything you asked me to do. I said, okay, that's all I want you to do. Just do what I asked you to do. And I told him the first round, I said, just be patient the first round. I said, don't be in a rush. Just take your time. You know, I said, look, it's okay if you lose the first round. I'm not worried about the first round. I said, because it's a 12-round fight. You have 11 rounds to go if you lose the first round. But I said, but all I want you to do is go out and establish the jab. Don't worry about anything else. You know, he said, you don't want me to go come? I said, look, the flow is going to come, but you got to get yourself involved in the fight first. So the first thing I want you to do is just go out there and use the jab. And you're going to see what other punches need to be thrown as the action goes on. And he went out there and he did that. And then all of a sudden, you know, he saw a right hand and bam, he hit it. He hit K-9 with it and K-9 went down. And so, and as you saw, he didn't rush to, you know, because we practiced so much, so many different scenarios in the gym. You know, and this is where, you know, a fighter, when he's thinking, and you know he's thinking, you know, and the first thing, you know, the first thing he had to do after he got the knockdown was to take his time. Don't rush back in there with your hands down because, you know, the guy is still strong and, you know, he's going to be throwing some power punches at you to try to get that knockdown back. So he came out real calm and cool and came back out took his time and used his jab. And that went, it went perfect. Then when he came back to the corner, he said, "That was great, right? That was a good round." I said, "It was a perfect round." I said, "That's a 2-point round for you. Now you're up. So now the other guy is going to get a little desperate. So all you got to do is just keep doing what you're doing. Just take your time, use your jab, and, you know, just let him run in the punches." And he said, "Okay." So he went back out again, and boom, he hit him with a jab this time and dropped him with a jab. So then, you know, he had the canine got up. Same thing, he came back, he took his time, relaxed a little bit, and, you know, he took his time. And that's the most important thing. I know he's thinking now, you know, of all the different scenarios. Like, if he gets, you know, we work on, if he gets hurt, what do he have to do? If he hurt the other guy, what do he have to do? You know, and he took his time, and he just, everything just worked out perfectly. And then came back to the corner after the second round or third round, told him, "No, you don't have to change anything." But I told him, I said, "If you knock him down again, then just try to put a little bit more pressure. Don't rush yourself, but put a little bit more pressure on him. And, you know, let's see how he reacts to you. Now you're putting the pressure on him." And he said, "Okay." So he came out and, again, used the jab and hit him with the right hand and dropped him. And, you know, he went back to the corner and he looked over at me this time, told him to get on top of him, you know, because we still had like 2 minutes left in the round, so we have a lot of time. So I knew he could get him at that point. And then after K-9 got up, he did. He went right back after him and hit him with 4 or 5 shots. He went down again. And that's when the referee stopped him. And everything just, you know, it just worked. It worked out so perfectly, man. You know, and you couldn't ask for a better scenario of how it happened. And, you know, he just made a statement to all the 154 pounders out there that, hey, now you got to look at me.
Ronnie, one of the things that I noticed, and this is going all the way back to when I believe he was supposed to fight Carlos Molina for the title, is just the amount of patience that Jamal has learned. We always knew he had the power. We always knew about the skill. But Ronnie, you know, do you contribute that to the 7 years that you've been together? Does that come along with the trust that's been built between the two of you and the game plan that you give him?
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. Again, the thing about it, you know, as I stated earlier, was like in the gym, the fight is won in the gym, you know, and, you know, it's like football, baseball, basketball, you know, you have to practice all these different things in case something happens. And this is the thing that I like about how we work, you know, and how my assistant coach, Creed Fountain, you know, he does a great job with the guys. You know, he always bring up scenarios. Okay, suppose you get knocked down. What are you going to do? How are you going to react? You know, we make them take a 10 count. I mean, an 8 count. Then, you know, okay, what you going to tell the referee? You know, how you going to hold your hands up and whatever. And vice versa, if you got the guy, you know, you first thing you do is, you know, go to the corner as quickly as you can and make sure you turn around. And the first thing you do is look at us in the corner and we give you instructions on what to do, you know, and stuff like that. And he, you know, he remembered all of that. And that's the thing. And, you know, for a young guy who's 25 years old to allow people to, "Oh, he's too young, you know, this and that." But I think if you just keep practicing those scenarios in the gym, you know, it works, you know, just like in any other sport. You know, you practice different things and, you know, and I always bring up other fights, you know, like when who was it? Janet Jacobs fought Sergio Amaro, you know, and that was the one thing that Jamal and I really harped on, you know, when we were training for this fight, was that, you know, Janet Jacobs dropped Sergio Amaro, but then he made the cardinal mistake. He ran in with his hands down, then he got dropped. And that's one thing, you know, that he remembers all the time. he remembers that, you know, that, okay, that happened to, you know, that happened to Danny Jacobs against a guy like Sergio Moro, who's not even a big puncher. But if you run into the shot is much harder than if a guy, if you just stand back, you know. But if you'd have jabbed his way in, moved his head, then he would have saw the shot coming. But he didn't do that. He rushed it, then he got dropped. So, you know, so, but, yeah, but, you know, but within the 7 years of us working together, you know, again, you know, it's like repetition. You know, if you continuously do stuff in the gym to let a guy understand when it happens to him in a fight, whether it's on the good side or the bad side, you know, and the good thing is you have to work on both, you know, if it happens to you. You know, even if you get knocked out of the ring, you have 20 seconds to get back in the ring unassisted. So, you know, I mean, it's a lot of things that you have to practice. And the good thing about us is we do, we practice all of those scenarios. And the guys, you know, the guys love it because, you know, as they see, it happens, you know, because, you know, and I think we just have to keep doing that. And it works for all our guys.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, Ronnie, because that's another aspect of your training and of the guys that we see you take on. You know, I spoke of young Pee Wee Crew, young Mr. Cruz, Cowboy Carl, Steve Lovett. These guys all watch each other. I mean, you know, you make sure that they attend each other's fights, that, you know, that they're part of the audience. They all are part of the process. So they get to watch each other, and you know, they all look upon each other as family, as big brothers and little brothers. How important is that to your particular style of training and establishing your program within these young guys?
Well, you know, and the good thing about it is, you know, we want the guys to learn from each other, and they do. You know, they, you know, sometimes they'll come up and say, hey, man, I see him do this in the fight. You know, would you teach that to me? And then I'll make the other guy, I'll make the guys help each other. You know, a lot of times they help each other on different scenarios and stuff like that. So, you know, so, but if they see something, sometimes they'll see something, I may not see it, and then they'll come to me. Hey, man, this guy's last fight, this guy did this to me, or he did that to me, and I really didn't know what to do. So, you know, so we'll just go back, you know, think about what it was, and then we'll work on it, you know. And the other guy may, one of the other guys in the gym may see it and say, you know what, I need to work on that too, because, you know, I saw a guy do that, and I was a little confused on how to do it. So, you know, so, you know, we just think of a lot of different things that could happen in the ring and what to do, how to do it, you know. So, you know, the good thing is all the guys, they want to learn. And that's the most important thing, is that, you know, and the good thing about it is, you know, for myself being in the sport for so long, you know, I've seen almost everything. But my assistant, who was one of my trainers when I was fighting, he's seen everything there is to see. So, you know, he loves to work on different things like that. The guys love it, and you know, it's just, you know, everybody wants to do it. So it's great.
Yeah, most definitely, and it reflects not only in the young gentlemen that you train. But, hey, the way they carry themselves, and, hey, now you have another world champion on your hands. So, hey, you can't argue with success. Ronnie, let's go over some of the news, I guess, that's been going over, that's been happening these last couple of weeks since we had you on. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, Virgil Hunter he was talking to a reporter, and he made a remark that the reporter kind of disagreed with. He said that he believes that the boxing media should color its criticism of the very sport that it covers. Now, what do you think about that, Monty? Do you think that, perhaps the media is too critical of the sport, or do you think that perhaps some of the writers have more of their own agenda on record rather than really promoting the sport itself?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think – here's what I believe. I think that, you know, it's funny because I see a lot of reporters that's in the pockets of a lot of promoters, and they only report good things on that certain promotional group. Everybody else, they kind of degrade, you know. And that's taking – what it does is it's put a knock on boxing in the very sport that everybody's – you know, this is people's living. This is how people make their living doing this. And to them, it seems like it doesn't matter that, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, it probably doesn't matter to them, but it does matter to the fighters. And that's what reporters have to understand. You know, they should only report what they see. They shouldn't report on anything else because this is our sport, you know. You know, you can't degrade the sport, you know. The thing about it, too, is they always try to degrade Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd Mayweather has fought the best fighters in his era, and he's beaten them. And they still find things negative to talk about the man, you know, which is so untrue and so wrong, you know. But half the time, you know, we know who, you know, who tells these people what or what not. And it's a shame because we know. I know. I know who's paying them to say bad things about certain guys and who's not telling them to do it. So, but, you know, the thing about it is, too, is you have so many reporters that's covering boxing that don't know anything about boxing, you know, especially all the new guys that's in the sport. You know, you have so many people in this sport that they don't know what they're looking at, you know, and it's a shame. It's really a shame that they don't know what they're looking at in this sport. So I think that, you know, if you're going to be part of anything, then you should learn the sport first before you start reporting on it. And you know, stop selecting just a few guys to write about. They should write about every fighter that's in a high-profile fight and cover it the way it's supposed to be covered. But a lot of times we don't see it. And it's a shame, but it's the truth.
Ronnie, you mentioned Floyd. You know, now, you know, I really hate to say it, but, I mean, you know, the industry has made Floyd the villain for so long, you know, and we've had so much controversy. Ronnie, is it going to be dull without Floyd Mayweather? Who are we going to talk about and throw the tomatoes at?
Well, you know, as always, there's so many fighters in the world. You know, trust me, somebody is going to be the scapegoat. But, you know, same way when Muhammad Ali, he got out of boxing, and said, oh, there's nobody left, you know. But then, you know, there's so many different fighters, man. You know, I think what people have to understand is no one man is bigger than the sport of boxing. No one is bigger than the sport of boxing. So I think when you look at the history of boxing, you know, someone always come up and steps up and steps out that everybody want to see. Now, the thing about it is at this stage of the career of all the fighters that are fighting right now, you know, it's so many different fighters that are really good. And, you know, so you can really pick anybody right now because there's so many good fighters out there right now. And you got a lot of up-and-coming young fighters. Look, boxing is going to be around forever. boxing isn't going anywhere. People can talk about it. They can be split about it. They can do whatever they want to. But boxing is not going anywhere. Now, somebody is going to take the lead. Somebody is going to take the lead. But, you know, now, you know, with all the guys that's getting ready to fight on pay-per-view right now, it could be one of those guys. It don't have to be. It could be one of the guys on the PBC. But it's going to be somebody that the fans just really want to see. And you will know it by the attendance, number one, and by the viewership, number two. So I think you know, right now, it could be anybody right now, you know, but it's just a matter of, you know, just everybody talking about this one person. And that's yet to happen. You know, it's only been a week since Floyd retired. So now, you know, I think we just got to wait and see who the next guy in line is going to be.
Now, we've talked about these sanctioning bodies and these belts quite a few times, and about the seemingly hypocrisy of it all. Now that this is supposed to be Floyd's last fight, most of these organizations have opted to let him keep the belts. Ronnie, what's that about?
Well, I think right now the WBC, they was going to announce something this week, and then they decided to wait until the convention to do it, which is November 1st to the 6th. So, you know, I think what they probably realize is that, you know, although a guy says he's going to retire from the sport, you know, he may or may not mean it. And so they don't want to rest the judgment on these things. And remember, with all these boxing organizations, it's about money. And no one makes more money than Floyd Mayweather. So you're not going to rush to judgment on that until he officially say, okay, this is, you know, this is the end. Although he's officially said it's the end, they want to give him their time to think about it, because they realize, hey, if we give up these belts right now, then, you know, we may be hurting ourselves with the money. So, and they all about money, nothing else but money. They don't care about anything else. So they're going to just hold out, and, you know, but they've already announced who they have two ranking guys in each division, or who the belts are going to go to, who's going to fight for what. So, you know, so I just think that right now they want to wait until their convention. So, you know, so they have a lot of, it's a big agenda. And, you know, they get so many people to come there just to see who's going to fight for those belts.
It just seems, you know, like, you know, one minute, you know, you're criticizing the man. You want to take away his belts. You know, he says he's going to give them up. You know, it's just a big merry-go-round. But another thing that I find interesting, Ronnie, is all of a sudden now we're scrambling for a pound-for-pound king. Ronnie, shouldn't we just let this play itself out? I mean, is it really necessary for us to just ordain somebody pound-for-pound because Floyd is left or supposedly left?
Yeah, you know, again, I think just like who the next pay-per-view star is going to be, you have to let it be. You can't rush into it, because then you might choose the wrong guy, you know. So then, you know, then the guy you choose go out and get knocked out or something, then all of a sudden you got to choose another guy. And then, you know, then it's such a hassle. So I think, you know, look, whoever the next top guy is going to be, it's going to have to, you know, you can't rush and choose him. You got to, you know, you got to let him be chosen.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, I understand some of the names that you're throwing around, Chocolatito, you know, Vladimir. I understand all of that. But like you said, I mean, you know, to me it's a little too soon, much too early. And, you know, let's see some of these other guys fight before we start handing out crowns here. Staying on kind of pretty much the same subject, British promoter Ed Hearn has said that he's going to make sure that there's going to be a lot of British fighters coming over to the United States trying to make their mark, recognizing that this is you know, the number one scene, boxing scene, if you want to get your fighters noticed and you want to start making money. Ronnie, what do you think about the possibility of more British fighters coming over here in the United States and making some possible for some very good matchups?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's great. You know, just, you know, boxing isn't just in the United States. Boxing is around the world. And this is how we say that if you call yourself a world champion, then you have to fight everybody. You can't just fight people here in the United States, you know. Boxers got to come from all over the world, and you have to defend against those guys. And, you know, and I think it's great that we get to see a lot of British come over here and show us their talents, and, you know, they want to be recognized and they want to be known also. So I just think it's a great thing. And, but, you know, I don't think it's just the British are going to be coming. I mean, already we see a lot of Australians are starting to come here. You know, the British are already coming over. The Japanese is coming over. The Chinese is coming over. So why not? The Russians are coming over. The Germans are coming over. So everybody's starting to try to make their mark here in the U.S. because they know once you get known, if you get known here in the U.S., then everyone around the world are going to know who you are.
Yes, you have to agree with that. Now, let's talk about some of these fights that are coming up. We've seen some of the pressers come out. The first one I want to talk a little bit about is Timothy Bradley and Brandon Rios. Ronnie, what do you think about this matchup? And preview Timothy and Brandon.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it about this fight is going to hinge on how well Timothy Bradley worked with Ted Atlas, because that's, you know, anytime you change, you know, that means you're going to be doing something new. And, you know, Teddy is going to try to get him to fight the style that he knows how to teach. And I don't know if that's going to mesh with Bradley or not, because Bradley is more of a boxer type, not a guy who likes to go and go toe-to-toe. He has no business going toe-to-toe with a strong guy like Brandon Rios. Brandon Rios, that's his fight. You know, his fight is, you know, stand in the middle and going toe-to-toe with it. You know, and not that Bradley can't do that, but I think at this stage of Bradley's career, he shouldn't be doing that. Especially when you go back and you look at the fight with Povotnikov and see what happened to him in that fight, you know. And Brandon Rios has a similar style. So if Bradley tried to go toe-to-toe with him and in that aspect of the fight, then there's a chance he's going to get knocked out, you know. And, you know, the thing about it, when you look at Tim Bradley, you got to understand that he's not a puncher. You know, he's just not that kind of guy that's going to hit you with one shot and knock you out. You know, that just doesn't happen. And so, you know, it's a lot of stuff that you have to look at when you look at this fight because of all the changes. But Tim Bradley has always come through when it was time for him to come through. And I don't know if he can do that in this fight because it depends on the style that he fights. You know, if he has boxers on the outside, of course I think he has a great shot. But if he sits in and tries to go toe-to-toe with a guy like Brandon Rios, I don't think he's going to win. So we're going to see. We're going to see what happens.
Ronnie, I have a lot of apprehension here just because Tim is going from Hall Diaz to Teddy. And because of to me, the great contrast in styles between the trainers. Ronnie, having been in the ring and gone through that yourself, how hard is it for a boxer to change trainers that have two very different styles, that have no similarities?
Well, you know, and that's the thing. That's what I was saying, that, you know, Teddy has his own style. The style that he's used to is there's a guy, say, like Mike Tyson, who, you know, he worked with before. You know, when you look at him when, you know, just go back and look when he had Michael Moore, and Michael Moore, when he fought George Foreman, he was boxing good, and all of a sudden, you know, he started trying to go toe-to-toe with George and got knocked out. You know, you could look at the same thing with Michael Grant. When, you know, Michael Grant was fighting, you know, he was the same kind of way. Then all of a sudden, he gets knocked out. And, you know, it's just styles. Styles make fights. But, you know, you have to be able to teach it both ways. And, you know, while I know Ted is a good trainer, he knows how to teach it both ways. But Timothy, you know, is the kind of guy that, you know, he's set in his ways. And this is why, you know, for him to change at this late of his career, it's, you know, it may hurt him more than help him. You know, even a great trainer like Teddy, I don't know if it better help him because he's too set in his way doing one thing.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with you here. I'm really interested to see, how this is going to change. And knowing that Timothy has so much heart and the way that he has fought, I'm kind of very apprehensive changing trainers also. But another gentleman, that I'd like to talk about real quick, he now says he's going to set his sights on Floyd's record, and that's Kell Brook. Ronnie, I have a lot of respect for Kell. I think, he has a very good style. But, Ronnie, I still just don't put him in the same category as Floyd. I mean, you know, I appreciate his aspirations, but do you think that Kell is the next Floyd Mayweather?
No, I don't think he's the next Floyd Mayweather because, you know, number one, you know, a lot of people don't know who he is. You know, his best claim to date is beating Sean Porter for the world title. And, you know, and he's defending his title over in Europe. So people here still don't know who he is. So, you know, he has a great record, 35-0, I believe. And, you know, why he may get the 49, you know, depending on who he fights, you know, that still don't make him, you know, the heir apparent to Floyd Mayweather. So I just don't see it. And in his mind, maybe he thinks, you know, he is the heir apparent, but he's not. You know, it's not going to be him, you know, until he, you know, if he was to say, come over here right now, fight a Keith Thurman, beat a Keith Thurman, turn around, fight a Danny Garcia, turn around, fight a Errol Spence, then maybe you can talk about that. But, you know, you just don't hear those fights being talked about. So I don't see it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there as much, you know, I mean, for number one, you know, I'd like to see, you know, before either one of them get anointed as the next Floyd Mayweather, I'd like to see him and Amir Khan square off, and then let's talk about who's the best in that weight class. Now, this has kind of set the stage up for a young man that we both like, Ronnie, but, you know, the thing of it is that, you know, he's such a small guy with such a big heart and such an open fighting style. And I'm talking about Mr. Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. As much as we like him, Ronnie, he is in one of those very small weight classes. But as far as entertainment and, just pure fan appeal, what do you think about Chocolatito and his style?
I mean, I like him. I like his style. But he's not going to be a guy because he's too small. You know, there's no big fights in the small weight. None. There's no money to be made down there. So people aren't going to pay for something like that because the division, there's nobody in the division. So, you know, there's no names down there. You know, you don't have, you know, a loaded division like you do in the welterweights or the junior middleweights or the heavyweights, you know, the super middleweights, even the lightweights or the junior welterweights. You know, you got names there. Nobody know the kids. I mean, nobody know the guys in the 120 pounds. Nobody cares to know them because that's just a division that, you know, we don't have hardly anybody in the United States in those divisions. So they're either from Japan, Mexico, China, Thailand, you know, those, you know, that's what a division is. You know, we don't have anybody in those divisions, so nobody is going to ever know those guys. And, you know, people aren't going to pay to see small guys fight. They're just unless they're on a big card. That's the only way to get the chance to see them.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, you know, like you said, I mean, for as entertaining as they are, the smaller fighters just aren't going to put enough butts in seats, and you're just going to have to kind of live with the fact that they're entertaining, but they're just not monetarily feasible. Ronnie, another gentleman that we're hearing about coming back, getting back in the ring very soon, and that's Mr. Andre Ward. Ronnie, why do you think it takes so long in between fights for such an accomplished fighter? And here's another fighter that even though he's good, you might want to put him on a pound for pound level. He's another one that just doesn't put butts in seats. How do you account for that, Ronnie?
Well, I mean, because it was basically they raised him in Oakland, and they refused to take him anywhere else. So right now it's kind of hurt them a little bit, you know, but it's not his fault. You know, you got to go back to his past promoter and, you know, and look at the way he tried to bring him up. So, you know, if he really went for the Super 6 tournament, you know, even in the Super 6 tournament, he fought all the fights in Oakland. You know, but the thing about it is, to me, Andre Ward is pound for pound the best fighter in the world because, you know, well, I don't think you could call him that right now because of the promotional problems. He didn't fight for a year, and then he finally came back and he had one fight. But now he's with a new promoter. And I think right now, you know, the problem is he makes too much money to you can't fight him too often. You know, you can only probably fight him 2-3 times a year. And, you know, he has to continue to fight big fights because, you know, because of the money he makes. And, you know, and he's locked down with HBO. So, you know, and people probably won't understand that, well, he don't fight enough, he don't do this, he don't do that. But, you know, the problem is that he makes a lot of money. And HBO is going to only pay so much for him. And, you know, he can't fight on pay-per-view unless, you know, he fights a big name. And, you know, and there's only a few names up there. He won't go to 175 to fight Kovalov. He won't meet Triple G in the middle to fight, you know, so he's basically stuck. You know, he's a champion, and you know, and he's really not big enough for lightweight. So I understand the move that he don't want to make to let anyway run. He could still make 168 pounds. I don't blame him for that. Why should a smaller guy have to go up and fight those big guys? You know, those guys are big and strong. Not to say that he can't handle them, but still, that's a lot. That's a lot for him, especially when he don't have any trouble making his weight. So he gets 68 pounds, that's who he is. And you got a lot of guys from 6 to 8 moving up to 6 to 8. So he going to always have somebody to fight. But the problem is he's locked in a contract with HBO, and he got an open motor. So they don't have a lot of dates. So when you're stuck like that and you don't have dates, he can't fight.
Yeah, it's kind of perplexing, you know, like you said. I mean, you know, the young man puts on a great show. He's a great talent, but he just seems to be stuck. Ronnie, last quick fight I want to talk about before I let you go. We just seen Peter Quillen come off a great win, call out Danny Jacobs. This fight has been set for December 5th already. Ronnie, my biggest concern now, the Peter Quillen I saw fight looked more like a damn light heavyweight than he did a middleweight. Is he going to be able to make weight for this fight?
Well, actually, I think he did something that people didn't, a lot of people didn't catch this. I don't know if you caught it, you know, in his last fight. The weight was 163, but he came in at 160. Everybody, a lot of people didn't catch that. I don't know why, but people didn't catch that. Peter Quillen weighed in at 160. And yeah, that's the smallest I've seen him look in a long time. He looked big on television, but he's not. He wasn't even look that big to me. Him and I, we had a conversation in the back after his fight. And, you know, and I told him, I said, well, you look small. He said, man, look, you know, when I get ready to fight Danny, I'm going to be right at my weight. I'm going to be on weight. You know, he said, I'm not going to get big. The only reason he got big before was because he was off for so long. And by now, he's been active. And he said, hey, I don't have problems making the weight now because I've been active. And, you know, and that's what it is. You know, but I mean, he looked good in the fight, and, you know, he's going to be ready to go, man. And I tell you what, that's going to be a good fight between him and Danny Jacobs. And, you know, I don't think he's going to have any problems with the weight because now, you know, he's had back-to-back fights. So he's ready.
Yeah, and he did look good. I was kind of surprised when everybody was talking about his power, but we did have him on the show Tuesday, and he pointed out to me, you know, hey man, you know, in my last 37 fights, I've had 37 knocks. You know, I guess you have to kind of go along with exactly what the gentleman is saying. I'm looking forward. Forward to that fight up there in Brooklyn, and maybe we'll see some of your guys on the undercard of that, Ronnie. But in the meantime, man, it's always glad to have you every Sunday. Appreciate you coming on, having a little straight talk with us. Why don't you tell us what your guys have coming up, and anything you might want the fans to know about what's happening out there in Flex?
Oh yeah, absolutely. On October the 6th. We have 4 guys fighting on the Fox Sports 1 series, on the Fox Sports 1 toe-to-toe Tuesday. Steve Lovett, Justin DeLoach, Ricky Edwards, and Cowboy Ryan Carr. Ryan Carr will be televised. It will be his first television fight, and he's looking forward to it. It'll be his first 8-round fight. And, you know, he's really training hard, and he wants to be impressive. He wants people have heard about him, but they've never seen him. So now they're going to get a chance to see the Cowboy.
Oh, that's great. I have to make sure to get Cowboy on before he makes his TV debut. So, hey, he's always a good interview. We appreciate him. And as usual, Ronnie, thank you very much, my man, and we look forward to seeing you again next week.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
You too. Well, everyone, we thank you all for your time. Another Sunday has gone by. We thank you for listening to the Weekend Wrap, and we look forward to having you Tuesday on Pugilist Corner. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week.